Hello, I'm David Hunt, CEO and founder of Hyperion Executive Search and your host for the Leaders in Cleantech podcast. This week, we return to the US, where we've not been for a few weeks, and to e-mobility as I talk to a multi-award winning entrepreneur, founder of SparkCharge, Josh Aviv. Great to have you with us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
It's cool been watching your journey from afar, and really excited to dig into the offering and the technologies that you're involved with SparkCharge. But I always like to get a little bit of a backstory, and yours is particularly interesting, Josh. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit of what brought you to founding SparkCharge in the first place, a little bit of the career up to that point.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, so I started SparkCharge when I was in college. So this was, you know, your definition of a dorm room startup. Started it while I was at Syracuse University. The idea came from a professor who at the time I was taking environmental economics class. And he said, if you want to solve a huge problem for the world, solve the problem of infrastructure for electric vehicles. We're going to be selling millions of electric vehicles and we're not going to have enough infrastructure to support them. And it kind of got me thinking about, well, you know, how do we solve this massive problem that almost everyone is going to face here in the coming years? And the idea that came to mind was, well, can we do a battery integrated charging solution that's mobile and can actually go directly to the EV owner? So that way there's no hunting, searching, finding, sitting and waiting at a charging station. You can actually have freedom to drive your EV and get the range delivered like we do with so many other goods and services today.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I heard you speaking on something else around exactly that. You know, you call your Domino's or your Just Eat or whatever, you call your Uber. And that level of convenience building around your lifestyle rather than, again, having any interruption to that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, you know, the way that a lot of consumers get goods delivered today, it's very simple, right? You open up your phone, you push a button, you can get, you know, a pizza delivered. Like we said, you can get goods and groceries delivered. And we kind of asked ourselves, well, why can't you have energy delivered, right? Why can't an EV owner be sitting on their couch at home and have their car charged? Why can't they be out and about and get range brought to their vehicle to make owning that vehicle more convenient? And we're now super happy and excited to be able to accomplish that.
Yeah. And it's been quite a journey. So since founding that idea whilst you were still at university, so what was the genesis of that beyond that? Because you've, again, had some early funding. You're on Shark Tank, right?
We were on Shark Tank. We've been a part of Techstars. We've, you know, really gone through a pretty amazing entrepreneurial journey or startup journey to date. We've learned a lot along the way. And then we're in a very fast-paced and fast-growing industry, right? So, I mean, we're one of the hottest industries to date. And it's been amazing to, you know, not only start the company, but grow it to where we are now. I think we're approaching, you know, just under 100 team members across the United States, and we've sold product around the world.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing journey. As I said, I've been watching you for quite some time. So we at Hyperion have been working in and around EV charging infrastructure and companies in that space for the last 4 or 5 years. And I've been driving a car with a plug for that period of time as well. And there's been, as you say, so much change internationally, but particularly obviously in Europe and more recently in the US. So again, let's perhaps share for the audience and a little bit more of that, service as charging as a service solution that you have. So clearly, the US is geographically very big. Again, perhaps has some bigger challenges with a grid, which is maybe less robust than parts of Europe, for example. And of course, the distances of travel are significantly greater. But tell us perhaps a little bit about the offering and how charging as a service works. More so, Josh, around the marketplace, because I think the concept is relatively straightforward. But you're serving fleets as well as consumers and other sort of, end users.
Absolutely. So when we think about, you know, charging as a service, right, it really opens up the door for, on the consumer side, to have more freedom around how you drive your electric vehicle. But on the business side, on the fleet side, that's where you really get into some amazing data. And that's when you really unlock a lot of amazing potential to have electric vehicles charged at scale. Yeah. From the fleet side, when you think about it, a fleet has a particularly difficult set of challenges when it comes to adopting or switching over to fully electric, right? You know, basically, you need those vehicles charged every single day. You need to be able to deploy those vehicles every single day. And then you need to be able to grow and scale that fleet as your business grows and scales. And infrastructure here in the United States and around the world does not work that way. If a fleet of, call it 20 vehicles, wants to have infrastructure, that can take, here in the United States, anywhere from 2 to 5 years to get done. And if your fleet grows over that 2 to 5 years, once that infrastructure is in, you then have to go through that process again. And so it can be extremely difficult for fleets to adopt EVs. But for mobile charging, you know, we're able to show up, we're able to charge every single vehicle turnkey every single day. That fleet owner now no longer has to worry about, did I forget to plug the vehicles in? How many vehicles do I have? How can I scale and grow? Basically, the EV charging is now set on autopilot, and we show up and charge every single vehicle every single day. And so the benefits are really quite simple, right? You know, if you're a fleet company or a fleet owner, you get a quicker ROI because basically you don't have to wait 2 to 5 years to get started. We've onboarded fleets in as little as same day, but on average, we can onboard a fleet in as little as 14 days. So basically, your time to deploy that fleet drops from 5 years to 14 days. And now that means you get a quicker ROI and a higher ROI on your fleet. And so we've been able to see fleets join the program just about every week now. And we're on track to be the largest and the fastest growing EV charging solution for fleets in the United States.
That's cool. Because again, there's two things there, which one is obvious, perhaps one is less so, is the fact that, as you say, actually just getting a grid connection to put in the capacity for EV charging is a challenge everywhere, certainly in Europe and of course in the US also. But also actually there's a conversation around the fact that not everybody goes back to base or back to depot. So there are people who have an electric fleet, but for example, they park at home. So what do they charge, and how do you, there are solutions around this. But again, that's another, I guess, easy solution. If you've got remote workers in your fleet, then that's a solution solved. And also, as you say, if it's going to take you a while to get the infrastructure actually installed that when you do have a depot or a depot, then that's again, as you say, a quick fix, a quick win. But those remote workers, is that something which you're seeing in the fleets that you're signing up?
Yeah, we don't see too many remote workers. I mean, the way that we think about a fleet is basically there's two types of fleets, right? There's a decentralized fleet, which means the vehicles are spread out. That would be as close to a remote worker situation as we get. And then you have a centralized fleet. So decentralized fleet, a great example of that would be a partner that we work with, like Zipcar. The vehicles are parked around a city, and then EV owners can rent them out, and they show up and they, you know, drive the vehicles. Well, we go out every day and we actually charge those vehicles on location. So if they're parked in a parking lot, a garage, street parking, we show up, we charge that vehicle, turnkey. Zipcar never has to worry about it. And then centralized fleets are basically where all the cars basically live at one location and then disperse from that same location and come back again. So that's basically a fleet where, you know, all the cars are centralized and we show up and charge every single car, same process. And so by having those two types of fleets in our portfolio, we're really, you know, almost covering the entire ecosystem that fleets operate in.
Yeah. Now, there's one thing which clearly is the big innovation that I see, at least, is that exact, the business model innovation, but also looking from a technology perspective, and I've seen some of the videos online, and we'll point the guest out, take a look at that. But is there any proprietary IP in the actual battery solution or the delivery delivery of DC power mobile? Is there a product iteration or innovation here, or is it purely the business model, which is so unique?
Absolutely. So it's actually a mixture of both. But on the patent side, we actually have 100% success rate with our patents. I think we filed 5 to date. All 5 have been accepted. And so when you think about it, from the time that we invented the world's first portable DC fast charger, we patented that system. We patented the architecture that goes inside. And then we created a business model unique to that product. And so we've been really innovating from day one when we first launched this idea into the market. And then every day that we go out and charge electric vehicles, we're constantly learning, constantly collecting more data that makes that infrastructure more valuable.
Because there's a lot of things, actually, sort of combined into that solution from a company perspective, which we'll dig into, but obviously from a technology perspective as well. So sounds like clearly you obviously, your qualifications are about in the environmental space, but not necessarily engineering. So do you have a good tech team that helped you actually with the development of the product to enable the business plan?
Absolutely. We have one of the best engineering teams, in my opinion, on the planet. These guys really, when they go out there, our team, they're constantly innovating, constantly working for solutions. But if you think about it, you know, our engineering team, we have to hire the best. We have to have the best because we're working in a field that's 100% brand new. You know, when you think about every other decent fast charger on the market, they're, you know, besides a couple of small things, they're all really the same, right? They all kind of do the same thing. They all kind of work in the same environment. They all get installed the same way. But our team, we really work in an environment where we're mobile, right? We're not connected to the grid. We're not, you know, sitting there waiting for a car to show up. We're actually going out and bringing the car energy. So we've really had to bring on an engineering team that, you know, A, is dedicated, but also extremely talented to overcome some of these, you know, call it problems and create those solutions for mobile charging.
Yeah. Team's critical, as you just highlighted there, and clearly that's something close to our heart as a search firm within the clean tech space. But you, as a first-time entrepreneur, pretty much fresh from college, to actually have the, first of all, clearly the I guess the entrepreneurialism to go out and just get shit done and build the company, but then actually hiring people, smart people, when you have nothing really to show for in your background, if you like. How did you find that starting to scale a team, and actually how have you found being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I mean, on the team side, I think it's really, you know, when we first started, we were obviously an extremely small team. When you're an extremely small team, the biggest thing that you have to work on as an entrepreneur is getting people to believe in what you're trying to build, right? And I think we did a really good job of that, right? Our mission was clear, our vision was clear, and we were able to get people to buy in. Hey, this is what we're building. This is what we're trying to accomplish. Right. And if you believe in that as well, then join in with us. Right. And let's go accomplish this together. And I think that's really a make or break for a lot of early entrepreneurs, is you need to be able to get people who, if you want to focus on the engineering side, you need to be able to get people who could take a job at Lockheed, at Raytheon, doing a lot of this, you know, high power work. And you need to say, hey, you know, I definitely can't pay you what they're paying, but we've got a really amazing mission and vision to change the world. And if you're willing to buy in, right, then let's go accomplish this. And so we did a really good job of that, finding key talent and then, you know, really getting everyone on the same page with what we were trying to, our goals were what we were trying to do. And then in terms of being entrepreneur, I think, you know, when we think about, you know, the journey of an entrepreneur, it's never simple. The best way I can describe it is it's a constant roller coaster, right? There's some really high highs, there's some really low lows. Right. And I think that as long as you're committed to what you're trying to build and how, and the solution that you're trying to bring to the world, right, it makes those, you know, low days a lot easier. It makes those high days a lot greater.
Yeah.
But it's by far, you know, not the easiest job out there.
No. And many of my guests, and obviously they're primarily, apart from a few VCs, entrepreneurs at various different stages. And I think the word insanity comes up quite often. You have to be a bit crazy to go on the journey and to succeed through those roller coaster hoops and turns and circles.
Definitely. I think insanity is a great word to describe.
It's a great journey. Just picking up, Josh, on those two things then, you know, as an entrepreneur, I think it's so critical that quite often founders, particularly tech founders, focus on the technology, which is, of course, important. But the things you hit the nail on the head there is around actually the vision that buys people in, the vision that enables someone to come and join the party, and also then the communication and the clarity. Because I think I've seen a lot of companies who've struggled, or when I do mentoring with a few of the accelerators I work with, it's the founders' difficulty in communicating the vision, both to investors, but also more importantly, or as importantly, to the team. And then that changes, of course, when there's 5 of you to 15 of you to 50 of you to 100. So how have you managed to keep the culture and keep the communication, keep the vision alive as the team has scaled?
Yeah, I think it really starts before. I think it really starts when you think about it in how we hire, what we look for, right? And then the team that we've built continuing to grow and improve the culture here, right? Obviously, you know, there's the saying, you know, culture starts at the top. I think while that's, you know, partly true, I think that's only 50% of the equation. You know, culture might start at the top, but it's really carried throughout the company, right? Everyone has to uphold it. And the moment that doesn't happen, right, that's when you start to see culture break down. So, you know, for us, you know, we've made it our mission to you know, make sure that we do have good culture, that we do bring in people who believe in what we're doing. And that's allowed us to scale and grow, right? Because you find other people who believe in what your company believes in as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And how does that work then with the team? Clearly, you've got a tech team, you've got a commercial team, but then, you know, on the other hand, you've got the guys or ladies, you know, who are in the truck actually delivering the charge, which I'm guessing are obviously remote as across the US. Are they? Do you subcontract that to partners, or do you have your own in-house delivery capacity? How does that work once you start to evolve and move across the US?
Yeah, so we actually, you know, the team that's out there, our tech team that's out there delivering the range, they're 100% SparkCharge team members. You know, we had a decision to make when we first started of, did we want to, you know, have a 1099 service where people kind of joined on at a whim? We started doing a lot of research into that, and what we found was the fact that the 1099 model really disenfranchises, in our opinion, it disenfranchises the worker. But it also disenfranchises the community that worker lives in. Mm-hmm. If you can provide, you know, a community, if you can provide a worker with, you know, good health care, fair pay, access to, you know, the green economy, joining a great field, a rapidly growing industry, then you could actually improve a community in which that, you know, that tech team member lives in. And so we made it a focus to not only go out and, you know, hire our own talent, so Every charge delivered is delivered by a SparkCharge team member, but we typically hire through workforce development programs. We hire in underrepresented communities that typically would be left behind in this green revolution. We actually go in and hire from and empower those communities. And so it's a really great program that we're excited. And it also allows us to grow a lot quicker. If you can control the product, the engineering, the operations, the sales, and the delivery of that service, it means that you can actually get a lot quicker feedback. You can grow a lot faster. You can implement a lot quicker on the fly as things develop and as things change.
Yeah.
And so it's really, you know, I'd say it's almost part of our secret sauce. A lot of people think that we outsource it, or, you know, we have contractors, but every tech team member out there that's delivering range is a SparkCharge employee with full SparkCharge benefits.
Well, that's really cool. Because again, as you say, there are always cases, and within, you know, tech world in particular, it's like outsource pretty much everything that's not core. And in a lot of cases, that's absolutely the right thing to do. But I think, as you say, when you're accessing the customer, that's really the critical point, isn't it? The interaction between you and the customer. And then, of course, the data and the feedback that comes back from that. So absolutely makes sense to do that in-house as rather than to outsource. But then that throws up, I guess, challenges of not just from the hiring, but managing remote teams and building that sort of HR capacity and stuff. So again, that's something you, I get, sounds like you've been partnering with others to find and to look after these employees. But I guess that's also a challenge and a cost for the business to have that direct resource.
Yeah. So, I mean, the cost for the business is really mitigated by the fact that, you know, our tech team knows our product in and out. They, you know, work hand in hand with our customers. Our customers know them. So it also, we really get paid back in dividends by the fact that, A, our operations are far more efficient because they're team members that work directly. They have a line of contact directly with the engineering team. They have a line of contact directly with the sales team. So our field team is in constant communication with the broader company. And then on the customer side, right, the customer knows, hey, this is, you know, this is a SparkCharge employee that's showing up and charging my car, right? There's a relationship built there. So that also helps improve customer loyalty over the long run, which we've been able to see. If you think about it from the fleet side, we've never had a customer actually leave the service, right? We have, you know, 100% retention across our business on the B2B side. And that's really due in large part to the fact that we have amazing techs in the field that are going out and servicing those customers on a daily basis.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So let's look a little bit clearly the US, and there are different legislations and different sort of, I guess, states of play for both the grid and, of course, for EV charging uptake across the US. Where are the hotspots? Where are you most active? And I saw recently you've delivered your first, is it the 1 millionth mile that you managed to deliver recently as a key milestone, which was pretty cool. But where are the sort of the parts of the US where you have the greatest density or where the greatest presence?
Yeah, so I'd say it's in two states. One, you know, is probably, you know, very obvious, California, right? We have a huge presence in California. We charge a lot of cars in California. The second one is, you know, the former Big Oil, right? So we have a large presence in Texas. And, you know, I think we're going to be in about three cities in Texas here by next month, you know, delivering range on a daily basis. So, you know, and it's funny if you think about the breakdown there, you know, California is a really good example of a state that adopted electric vehicles early, right? And because of that, there's a high number of electric vehicles, but it means that the infrastructure is also almost entirely overwhelmed, right? So that means that you really can't, it's having a hard time deploying infrastructure, and then the infrastructure that's there really can't support the vast amount of vehicles. And if you look at it, you know, a state like Texas that, you know, was, you know, basically, you know, predominantly big oil country, you know, gas was always cheap. They were a little bit slower on the adoption of electric vehicles. But that means that now that people have adopted electric vehicles, the infrastructure isn't up to par, right? It's a little bit of a crossover there. And then the geographical challenges are much different as well. In Texas, we've seen that EV1ers actually drive a lot further. They put a lot more miles on their car because geographically things are more spread out. So they need actually more energy than in some cases the people, the EV owners that drive in California. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you think about it, succinctly to answer your question, you know, we have a lot of energy in California, a lot of energy in Texas. We also have energy in Boston here in the United States and Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And we'll be opening up, you know, probably another two to three states here by the end of the year.
Cool. There's so much, obviously, to go out. And I seem to recall not so long ago you had the pleasure of meeting Joe Biden, if I recall correctly. And obviously, the Inflation Reduction Act has made a big difference to a lot of clean technology and mobility companies in the U.S. Is that something that you've seen the benefit of, either directly or indirectly?
Meeting Joe Biden or the CHIPS Act?
Well, firstly, did you meet Joe? Because I'm fairly sure I seem to remember that you had as part of that. But also just in terms of the Inflation Reduction Act, whether that's been a boost both to your business, but also are more fleets now able to engage and willing to engage in electrification because there is that level of support for companies to get involved?
Absolutely. So we had the profound pleasure of meeting Joe Biden. And, you know, being graced with the opportunity to introduce him at the signing of the CHIPS Act, which now has produced, I think someone said, almost $1 billion or a couple hundred billion dollars in infrastructure for chip manufacturing here in the United States. And so we're excited to be a part of that, to be a part of history. And then as it relates to, you know, the IRA, you know, one of the things that we've seen is that fleets are actually able to grow. Electric vehicles are able to be purchased and manufactured in greater quantities. And we've been seeing that on our end as well, right? And this kind of goes back to the beginning point where we talked about allowing fleets to scale. Some of our fleets are adding a vehicle almost every day to our platform. They're getting new vehicles in. They're switching old gas vehicles out. And they're able to do that because, you know, we're mobile charging. So there's no downtime for infrastructure. There's no waiting to figure out which plug it is. They can onboard almost as many electric vehicles as they want, and then we service them every single day. Yeah. So it's been great to see the IRA be successful here in the United States.
And that's what you, because clearly as your customer base grows at pace, then clearly you have to do so likewise in terms of your own infrastructure, your own sort of number of vehicles, number of battery resources. Is that something you've been able to participate in through the IRA and how you managed to keep pace with the growth of the sector as a whole, which, as we've said before, is super fast moving?
The way we keep pace with the sector is we try to stay one step ahead, right? So, you know, as we kind of mentioned earlier, we've done a really good job bringing innovative technology into the market and into the field. One of the things that we also do is that we manufacture our tech. So we manufacture, you know, all of our chargers, all of our batteries here in the United States. We just opened up a brand new manufacturing facility in Buffalo, New York. We were originally in a 6,000 square foot facility. We're now in almost 50,000 square foot facility. So huge manufacturing plant that we'll be doing some press on and bringing to light here in the next couple of months. But that means that basically we can manufacture product and have it into the market in as little as 3 days to service a customer. So we're constantly staying ahead, making sure that we're able to send energy into markets that need it or send it to customers who are growing their fleets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's jump back to you for a second, Josh, because that's it's really hard as an entrepreneur sometimes to catch your breath, right? And particularly in the sector that we're in, or you're in more particularly in mobility, is so fast moving and so much has evolved over the last few years. How do you find the time to, stay grounded and adapt and run with this change? Clearly, the business now was very different than it was a year ago and again, very different from the year before that. So how have you personally managed to deal with and cope with the constant growth and the constant change and constant challenges that you face?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for me, it's, you know, one of the big things as an entrepreneur is trying to remain calm, but also having patience, right? So, I mean, there's challenges that are thrown at you every single day, whether they're internal or external. The biggest thing is, you know, working with your team, A, to figure out a pathway to work through those. And then I think on the personal side, it's, you know, constantly remaining calm, constantly remaining level-headed. There's, you know, at this stage in the game, there's not much that you haven't seen.
Yeah.
And so it's making sure that you're able to articulate to your team a pathway through when problems pop up and that you can work through a solution. And then on the personal side, it's making sure that you stay grounded, right? It's making sure that you're constantly working to continue to be a better leader and working with your team to make sure that they're continuing to grow as well.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe expand about that as a leadership team, because as I say, when you're early days, you're kind of in control and everybody knows you and everybody knows each other. I talked about this before when I grew my previous solo business, that there comes a point where you just don't know or don't interact with everybody within your company every day. You obviously make an effort to make sure you know who everybody is, but how have you built a leadership team that shares the same vision as yourself and that you communicate through? Because that's again some of the challenges when you start to build additional levels within a business and operations scale, and you start to evolve a leadership team, and you're not involved in every decision or not involved in every situation, which is clearly good for the business, but it's then how do you make sure that's consistent in what comes through? So do you have a particular sort of leadership style or leadership sort of philosophy in terms of building that team?
Yeah, I think it's really about hiring people who are smarter than you, right? As an entrepreneur and as a CEO, you kind of wear, you know, a lot of hats, and that's a great analogy that I like to bring to the leadership team, right? When you first start out, you have to do everything, right? You are HR, you are sales, you are marketing, you are doing, you know, like you have to do everything yourself. I think the beauty of a leadership team is that you can take those hats off, right? And you give them to people who are experts in that field, right? You know, and so I think for me, and you know, the way that we built our leadership team is, we want to hire people who are experts, and we want to hire people who are smarter than me in those fields, right? You know, our marketing team, I love those guys. They're some of the best. They do some of the best work, right? They're constantly putting us, you know, in the forefront of the industry and keeping us in conversations, right? You know, I shouldn't be the one that pops up and tells them how to do marketing, right? I shouldn't be the one that pops up and tells engineering how to do engineering. I think a lot of entrepreneurs have a hard time with that. They want to, you know, be in control. They want to have their hand in everything, right? But I think the beauty of growing a team is that you hire people who know more than you in those fields, and they're able to take the business to new heights.
Yeah. It always reflects on a quote, I think I'm pretty sure it was Steve Jobs, who said, don't hire smart people and tell them what to do. you have to get out yes. of their way, right? Hire the best people and let them do the best work. But it is tricky.
I love that.
As an entrepreneur, where by definition we're control freaks, right? You start the business, you want to know everything is working, you want to be involved in everything. But I think some find that difficult to have the self awareness to let go. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges from a leadership perspective is that you enable or you choose to let go and enable people to do their best work.
It is, and I think that's like almost every entrepreneur's dilemma, right? Because in a way, you are responsible for the business. You're responsible to your shareholders for the business, right? And by letting go, you're kind of letting that responsibility go, but ultimately you're still accountable. And so I think a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with that, but it's part of the growing curve of running a successful business, right? And obviously for every entrepreneur, you know, no matter the outcome or the end goal there, right? It's impossible for one person to do it by themselves. So you need a strong team. You need to trust that team and be able to grow with that team.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll move back to the technology or to the company solution in a moment. But just to close out on this point of the entrepreneurship side of things, you mentioned before clearly been a roller coaster and you go from extreme dark days to extreme highs. Maybe you could share a couple from either side of that. Any particular challenges or dark days and how you overcame those? And equally, what have been some of the biggest highs over the last few years?
That's a good question. You know, it's funny, you encounter the dark days, and then when you find a way through them, they kind of get pushed to the back of your brain. I would say one of the dark days for us was probably figuring out how we met the demand of the market, right? So you know, when you first start out, when you're making a product, you typically, you know, you think everything's set, you think everything's good to go. And I remember during the COVID times when lead times were pushed out factories were shutting down. We really had to hunker down. We really had to figure out a way to overcome, you know, basically this external factor that was, you know, negatively affecting everyone's business.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I remember was, you know, we had to make a decision on, you know, do we want to reduce our workforce? Do we want to, you know, do all these other companies were just slashing left and right. And we made the decision to not. We made a decision to keep our team on board. We made a decision to figure out how to move people remotely. How do engineers do work remotely? And I remember the day that, you know, our office space, you know, sent the email saying, hey, you know, we're going to close down the office. I remember, you know, telling people, hey, grab your monitor, grab your laptop, grab your keyboard, take it home, right? Just take it home with you. And I mean, and we cleared out of there that day. But our team was actually able to kind of come together, continue to make progress, continue to develop. And we were actually still able to launch a product in the midst of that, which was a huge, huge moment for our team. And then obviously some of the high highs are, you know, launching a product, going on Shark Tank, introducing the president. But I think the biggest high from an entrepreneur is, you know, watching the company grow. When you think about it, you know, when you start out and you're by yourself, right, it's very easy to kind of say, okay, well, you know, we're growing. Or when you're just a small team, it's very easy to see that you're growing. But as you grow, as the company grows, as the product grows, as people enjoy the product, you're able to provide, right? The company is able to provide for other employees. And so I think that's a really, really high for me, is the fact that we're able to really grow the company, provide for our employees, and allow them to provide for their families. And so, you know, every employee that we bring on, you know, it's a big responsibility, but for me, it's like a joy to say, well, the company's grown to the point where, like, we can now bring on a new team member. We can now bring on a new family member. And so I really love that part of the business.
Yeah. And, you know, that echoes quite well about, you know, we as entrepreneurs, and you create something and you create an opportunity for yourself. And it's first and foremost because, you know, it's fun. And hopefully there'll be, you know, some financial benefit as well. But it's actually a fun process, as much as it's can be insane at some time, as we've touched on. But actually, providing an opportunity for somebody else who might not otherwise have an opportunity is a buzz, right?
It is. It's a huge buzz. And you really get to see it, you know, maybe probably not the program, but you kind of get to see it trickle down too, right? You really do get to see the impact that your company has on their life, right? And so that's always a huge, huge benefit and a very humbling moment for me as a CEO to see the company grow now, right? You know, if we're almost 100 people, we're supporting almost 100 families. Yeah. Right. And that's amazing.
Which is cool. I want to ask a question, which hopefully you won't mind me asking. You know, we work quite hard within Hyperion to support the diversity within the clean technology marketplace, and it's a challenge. Gender diversity is quite obvious because, you know, we all know the makeup of boards and some of the challenges there, but obviously ethnic and other forms of diversity come up as well. Do you feel, and obviously you're quite celebrated in the US and rightly so for what you've achieved, do you find any kind of either, you know, additional responsibility as a person of color and as a high profile CEO, is that also a burden, or is that something you relish? Because clearly it's a great attribute and great that you've been able to do what you've been done and shine a light on just some of these you know, topics that you've, you know, created a fabulous business. Is that something, a badge that you wear or that you're conscious of? Has it been a hindrance or a help during your growth?
Definitely not a hindrance. Definitely not something that holds us back, nor should it hold any company back. You know, we're proud, you know, here at SparkCharge, 67%, you know, we're across the country. I'm sorry, across the company, you know, 67% of our company is diverse, right? And so, you know, that's typically something you don't see in, you know, a lot of heavily engineering fields. And even within a lot of startups, you don't really see that. But the fact that, you know, over 67% of our company represents as a minority, that's something that we're very proud of. It's something that, you know, it's not easy to do, but it also speaks to the type of company that we are inclusive, that we are diverse, and that we want to continue to build. You know, that's part of our culture, and that's something we want to continue to build, to create an amazing workspace where, you know, everyone feels comfortable right. and everyone feels appreciated.
Yeah. And that's a really tough challenge culturally, not just that in itself, but maintaining the culture and creating the culture that's so inclusive, regardless of what particular areas that's in, is a challenge. Because as we said, as you start to scale, keeping the culture and keeping the vision and keeping everything alive is always a challenge, but it's great that you've been able to achieve that. Just going back to what's next for you and the company, clearly on just basis on geography, there's a lot for you to achieve in the US, and maybe you have plans overseas. It'd be good to get your thoughts on that. But also what's next as the company evolves and the market shifts? Where would you be in 2-4 years time?
Yeah, so I mean, we're definitely looking at international expansion. We do plan on entering London in the UK here, probably as early as next year sometime point. So we'll be doing mobile charging overseas pretty soon. And then, you know, when we think about, you know, 2-3 years down the road, we're really excited for what the electric vehicle industry holds, not only here in the United States, but around the world, and how mobile and grid-free solutions will play a role in that. You know, if you think about it, I think there was a stat that said, you know, I think it's here in the United States, only 3% of all vehicles driven here in the United States are electric. So that means right. There's 97% of the vehicles on the road today that still need to be moved over to electric. So we're really in the, you know, call it the first 5 minutes of the first quarter of the game when it comes to electrification around the world. And so that really gets us very excited about the growth and where the market's heading. And then, you know, I think, you know, probably early next year, we'll be announcing a product that I think is really going to disrupt the way that people think about mobile charging and how people think about mobile charging at scale. And we're really excited about that. And I think it's really going to open up EV adoption in ways that we probably haven't seen before. I think it's going to open it up for businesses, public charging networks, EV owners in particular, that will carry us through probably the next 5, 10, 20 years. So we're excited to, you know, constantly be one step ahead of the industry,
Yeah. Always
innovating and excited for the growth.
Cool. Well, look forward to that. We'll certainly look forward to the launch of and see what that solution is all about. Do you know one thing, in total honesty, Josh, I've been watching you for a while, and when we're building up to recording this podcast, infrastructure is growing at such a pace. I know parts of Europe and the UK are more advanced in mobility than other places, but I think last year we added 42% of charging infrastructure to the UK. Still, there are, of course, issues and things that need to be done, but it just seems to me that there's so much more enablement of the transition that you and your company are able to, and obviously this concept of mobile charging still offers, even though the infrastructure is constantly growing. But they, as you say, that early enablement seems to be something where, you just can add some very obvious, very quick value to the transition.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we think about it, you know, the mobile charging aspect, obviously the benefits are, you know, they're obvious, right? You know, basically you can start charging vehicles right away. You don't have to wait for infrastructure. And that's something that, you know, we're going to continue to see for a number of years. And it's something that we're excited about. And then, you know, also as, you know, as infrastructure grows, we'll be playing a part in that. I can't really speak on how, but we'll be playing a part in that fixed infrastructure space as well. But we'll be looking at it from a different viewpoint, a different lens. And that's something that, you know, I think when we finally unveil that solution, I think it's really going to turn the light bulb on in a lot of people's minds as to like, okay, this is true infrastructure at scale. And it doesn't need to be burdened by, you know, the limitations of existing infrastructure.
Okay. Well, now we get teasing even more, which is great. So I'm sure the audience would like to start following you. We'll point obviously links to the company and to your social channels so they can keep in touch and see where you are at the moment and obviously be excited about things that are coming down the line. Just going back to yourself then, Josh, in closing, it's been great to spend some time with you. We touched a little bit on the dark days. I don't want to particularly focus on that, but just the journey of entrepreneurship is tough and at times sometimes really lonely. Just perhaps if you could share if there are either people or sources or media or books or some place you go for inspiration, motivation to you know, on the days where it is a bit tough sometimes. Are there particular sort of, as you say, go-tos to sort of get you back on track or to keep your motivation high?
Yeah, so I think number one is probably prayer. When things are rough or when things are dark, you know, for me personally, it's prayer. Also, have a really good partner in my wife, who's been with me every step of the way. So that's been amazing to have through the journey. And then obviously your team, having people you can trust, friends and family. I think the biggest thing though is that, a lot of times when things are rough or when things are, if you're at a low point, typically that means it's usually followed by a high point, right? So, I mean, it's really ebb and flow. It's really a roller coaster ride. And I think knowing that there's a high point on the horizon is something that keeps a lot of entrepreneurs going. And, you know, it's funny. It reminds me of like a quote that I was told by another entrepreneur friend. It was like, you know, who is David without Goliath, right? If we think about the story of David and Goliath, right? David was basically a sheep herder, right? Without Goliath, he would have remained a sheep herder, right? It was slaying the giant. It was slaying the problem in front of him that made him who he was, right? And so as entrepreneurs, I think when we look at problems, we need to look at it in that perspective. That's a great way, or at least sometimes it's a great lens to look at it of, you know, if I can overcome this problem, what do I unlock, right? What does it change for me and my company and my team, right? And if I'm able to overcome that problem, how far can I go? And when the next problem pops up, will it be as difficult as the problem that's lying before me? And so, you know, if you think about that David and Goliath situation, that's a lot of what entrepreneurs go through on a daily basis, right? The problem that's in front of you, the low moment, the dark moment, if you can overcome it, right? How does it change your future?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm quite fond of the phrase, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You actually say always looking at what comes from that. Cool. So listen, Josh, it's been great to spend some time with you. I really appreciate you taking the time out. So we'll point on the episode pages to SSA, to your website and to various links so that people can find out more about SparkCharge. But for now, it's been great to share some thoughts with you. And thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.